The summer of 1952 had the greatest wave of UFO sightings since the first flying saucers of the late 1940s, and the Air Force was under mounting pressure to produce an explanation. Then, for two nights in July, a group of UFOs entered restricted airspace over Washington, D.C., and triggered a media frenzy. The public reaction to the Washington sightings proved that the global fascination with UFOs would not go away, and prompted the Air Force to retreat from its responsibility to answer to the public on this enduring mystery. Project Blue Book, the UFO investigation group of the U.S. Air Force, received reports in record numbers in the summer of 1952. Ominously, an unnamed scientist told Blue Book director, Edward Ruppelt, that he would see the granddaddy of all UFO sightings in a few days, and that it would probably occur in Washington. A few days later, it happened. Around 11:40 on the night of July 19, 1952, a radar operator at Washington National Airport began tracking eight uncorrelated targets southeast of Andrews Air Force Base, moving 160 to 210 kilometers per hour. Suddenly, two of them darted off at tremendous speed, with one being clocked at over 11,000 kilometers per hour. Another operator corroborated the reading from a second radar at the airport. The operators contacted Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland, where it was found that flight controllers there were tracking the same targets on their radar scope. They also saw three tailed orange lights from their tower moving erratically. Later in the morning, the tower operators at Andrews saw a huge fiery orange sphere hanging over their radio range station. The controllers at National were tracking on radar. The three radar stations continued to track 8 to 10 targets over the next 6 hours, though they didn't always track the same object simultaneously. At one point, however, all three radar stations tracked a target north of Washington, discussed it over the intercom, then watched it disappear from all their screens at the exact same time. The objects entered prohibited airspace over the White House and the Capitol building, though they exhibited no hostile intentions and moved with no apparent purpose. They seemed to move more frequently when there were aircraft around, however. Airline pilots also saw strange lights that night. At one point, both radar controllers at National Airport tracked a target that an incoming pilot had seen from his cockpit at precisely the location indicated on radar. The operators watched the target move on radar at exactly the same time that the pilot saw it speed away. The same pilot saw six more identical lights in the next 14 minutes. 2 hours later, another pilot reported a light trailing his plane. The object was also seen on radar at National Airport, and when it left the plane's side, it moved on radar as well. Jet fighters were requested several times for an intercept. Unfortunately, by the time that one arrived after the third request, the objects had already disappeared, and the pilot was never able to see the objects from his cockpit. The sightings made front page headlines and quickly became the biggest news story in the US. They caused a stir at the Pentagon as well. Even President Truman had requested an explanation. Eventually, intelligence decided that Ruppelt perform an investigation. However, he was denied a car and any travel reimbursements from the Air Force, and was required to report back to Wright-Patterson Base before he could interview all the witnesses around Washington. For a week, new reports were pouring into Blue Book at a rate of 30 or 40 a day. Then, the targets returned on radar. Around 10:30 p.m. on July 26th, the same radar controllers at both National Airport and Andrews Air Force Base tracked the targets as they were spread out in a semicircle around Washington. All reporters and photographers were cleared out of the radar room, as controllers requested an intercept around 11:30 p.m. But once again, the jets arrived too late, and the targets disappeared. At this point, people around Newport News, Virginia called in to report strange spinning lights of alternating colors. Tower operators at Langley Air Force Base then saw a similar light, and called for an interceptor, which also saw the light before it suddenly disappeared, like someone turning off a light bulb, in the pilot's words. Several times after this, the pilot was able to lock onto the target on radar, but the object consistently darted away before he ever got a close inspection. Before sunrise, the objects reappeared on the radar scopes at Washington National, and the F-94s returned. Though the targets remained on radar this time, they repeatedly disappeared from view around 3 kilometers away, before the pilots could see anything more than a point of light. The jet's radar operators were not able to track the targets on their radar screens. They gave up the chase just before dawn, and the objects never reappeared. The second night of sightings made front page headlines once again, and the media demanded an explanation. Ruppel claimed that he nearly incited a riot amongst members of the press when he refused to comment on the sightings at a hotel lobby in Washington. New UFO reports came in by the hour, and Ruppel even received a call from the president's aide wondering what was going on. Under pressure, the Air Force held a press conference at the Pentagon on July 29th, just 3 days after the second incident. It was one of the largest and longest-lasting press conferences in American history, and the largest since World War II. Here, Major General John Samford discussed the lingering unknowns in the Blue Book files, and suggested the visual sightings were misidentified stars or meteors.
There have been a certain percentage of this volume of reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things. It is this group of observations that we now are attempting to resolve. We have, as of date, come to only one firm conclusion with respect to this remaining percentage, and that is that it does not contain any pattern of purpose or of consistency that we can relate to any conceivable threat to the United States.
He then introduced Technical Intelligence Captain Roy James to suggest the possibility that the radar returns were generated by a temperature inversion, a common meteorological phenomenon that caused radar waves to bend downwards and pick up objects on the ground. Strangely, the general then gives airtime to Donald Kehoe, fiction writer, ufologist, and intense critic of the Air Force, to explain that UFOs were really alien spaceships.
With all due respect to the Air Force, I believe that some of them will prove to be of interplanetary origin. During a 3-year investigation, I found that many pilots have described objects of substance and high speed. One case, pilots reported their plane was buffeted by an object which passed them at 500 miles an hour. Obviously, this was a solid object, and I believe it was from outer space.
The conference succeeded in satisfying media curiosity, but to the Air Force, the lead-up was a demonstration in the dangers of public hysteria. The volume of UFO reports at the time of the Washington sightings was so great that some intelligence officials feared that the UFO phenomenon could be exploited to overwhelm military channels of communication during an enemy invasion. As a precaution, the Air Force introduced some new policies aimed at diminishing the public's fascination with unidentified flying objects. Air Force Regulation 200-2, for example, stripped Blue Book of its investigative function, and classified all radar scope photographs of UFOs. It also prevented officers from discussing any cases for which they could not already provide an explanation. The CIA also did their part to delegitimize the UFO phenomenon by assembling the Robertson Panel, a team of scientists who watched 3 days of presentations and ruled that UFO research was scientifically without merit. The panel delivered a secret report that almost perfectly mirrored the CIA's own objectives on the UFO issue, including the desire to debunk more sightings and reduce public interest through education and entertainment media.
I came away from the meeting and from the room with the distinct feeling, however, that the panel had deliberately moved to debunk the whole subject and not to give it the serious scientific attention which it deserved.
None of the radar operators agreed with the temperature inversion explanation. Temperature inversions occurred almost every day that summer, but never before or after had they caused these sightings. Weather-related targets are often amorphous and inconsistent, but on the second night, sharp and distinct targets had been tracked continuously for almost 2 hours. Technicians confirmed during the sightings that the radar units were not malfunctioning. The radar operators at both airports all insisted that the targets were caused by radio waves bouncing off solid, probably metallic objects. But none of them were willing to speak out against the official explanation. Ruppelt also had good reason to believe that the tower operators at Andrews had been convinced to drop their story of a fiery orange sphere over the radio range station. One of the F-94 pilots also changed his story after talking to Ruppelt, and wrote in an official report that he'd only seen lights reflected off a layer of haze. Even the Air Force did not seem to believe its own explanation, as the official Blue Book files list the two Washington sightings as unknown. At least one pilot was convinced that the radars had been tracking a steamboat on the Potomac River. It's also suspicious that although many of the objects appeared in the areas where the Washington National and Andrews radar scopes overlap, rarely did all three stations pick up the same target. Still, many of the other reports that poured in that summer were even more compelling than those from Washington. The night of the second sighting, a similar incident occurred in California. Another F-94 got within visual range of a large, yellowish-orange light that darted away at tremendous speed every time the F-94 got within weapons range. The night of the conference, a target appeared on a radar screen in Michigan, and an F-94 went out to intercept. The pilot and his radar operator chased a large ball of light that changed colors, shrank in size, and made rapid changes of speed. Both the jet and the ground radar tracked its movements. The sightings over Washington, D.C. in 1952 were one of the best early examples of multiple witness sightings that were also correlated with targets on multiple independent radar units. It was one of many radar cases in the Blue Book archives that the Air Force explicitly denied having.
Has there ever been a report of a flying saucer, Captain, that was translated into hard information right here, a plot on the board in this room?
These sightings have never been substantiated and could not be translated into hard radar return figures.
Whatever the U.S. Air Force really knew about UFOs, their public stance on the issue changed dramatically after the Washington sightings. Project Blue Book was slowly turned into a public relations front, and the Air Force became more active in their effort to debunk UFOs and to downplay the importance of investigating reports. The Washington sightings were among the last great cases before UFOs stopped making national news, and before the Air Force stopped treating them as matters of public concern. YouTube is hiding our videos now, and ad revenue is way down from what it was. Help us keep making these videos by pledging a monthly donation on Patreon, or sending a tip at buymeacoffee.com. Think Anomalous is created by Jason Charbonneau. Music by Josh Chamberlain.